This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Emmerus, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. So we made it through another tax season, and hopefully you did as well. Isn't it funny because generally how good or bad that you feel like your tax season went is probably the opposite of how your previous year went as well. You owed a lot of money in taxes. I hope you made a ton of money last year or else your accountant's got some questions to answer. You don't owe anything or getting a big refund? Maybe last year wasn't so good. But this week, we're going to look into the age-old phrase, the rich don't pay their fair share in taxes. Before we get into that, I just wanted to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Just wanted to say thank you to the feedback we get. Thank you to the questions. Got a couple good ones last week as well. And send those questions in because we will be doing another mailbox episode to answer those ones live on air. And last but not least, we cannot forget about our dedicated sponsors, NapaTrax and Promotive, the best shop management system, the best shop recruiters out there. If you need a new shop management system, if you need to add the right people to your team, give them a call and let them know we sent you there. Let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop. NapaTrax will move your SMS into the fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Visit them online at napatrax.com. That's NAPATRACS.com. Promotive makes automotive recruitment simple. They could be on the job boards and take care of every aspect of the recruiting process, giving you more time to focus on your shop and your customers. Visit them on the web at gopromotive.com. To look at this statement, the rich don't pay their fair share, first off, we have to define rich, which is kind of funny. I was driving today and if you live in Baltimore, you might be familiar with 105.7. DC area's got 106.7, but it's just sports radio. But like a lot of sports radios on the weekends, before football season, stuff like that, they'll have investment guys on Sunday. And so they were talking about this and think about the idea of like, what is the status symbol? That person's a millionaire, right? $1 million that has been around forever. And a lot of people say, hey, if you have $1 million and you live most places, you're probably not even technically rich, right? You're not even in the 1% or whatever you define rich as. But let's be real. I mean, if you're looking at this, you know, if you have $50,000, rich is a relative term, right? Hey, you might not be the top 1%, even in the county, making $50,000. But as far as the world goes, I think you're in the 0.1% at $50,000. I know you don't live in Senegal or Bangladesh or something like that. We live here and yeah, it's getting more expensive by the day. What was I looking at? I think someone shared it before. I think it was living somewhere in California. But in order for like a family of two to get by, and now you got to be careful on this stuff because this is kind of where all this comes from is people not understanding taxes. But they were saying to comfortably get by and wherever this was with two kids, a married couple, they would have to make around $370,000 a year, which is crazy. Now, define comfortable on it, right? Are they going to Cabo for spring break? I don't know, but it's true. I mean, a lot of places around the country, just look at how much it is to buy a house. That's generally people's largest expenses. And if a starter house is going for $1.6 million, yeah, you're in for a little bit of a hard time there. When I think of rich, I don't really use that term that much. But let's just kind of look into it in a bit less of a dramatic way, right? So we can all agree that the top 1% is rich. Now, what is the top 1%? It can be anything. There's top 1% based on the state and there's national. And like I said, there's international. Let's be real. Most of you guys listening are in the United States and 95% of you guys are in North America. For us around the world, you can get a little bit of a snapshot on what the average American is paying here. So top 1% of income earners in America is around $800,000. Like I said, some states, top 1% is over $1 million. Obviously, some of the poorer states, it is well below $800,000. But as of right now, top 1% is around $800,000. And so I think this is a good number to look at here for a couple of reasons. Top 1% is making around $800,000 a year, right? So this is going to be the focal point of the rich, and we're going to see if this section actually pays their fair share in taxes. The top 1% at $800,000 kind of works out well because the top tax bracket, which you do not reach until you're around $700,000, a little over $700,000 if you're married. If you're single, it's less than $700,000. I think there's a joke in there about being married and having kids and how much that money would be really used for, but hey, we'll sidestep that one. If you're looking at this and you're making around $800,000 a year, then your top tax bracket is taxed at least 37%. The reason I say at least 37% is because this is just income tax. There's surtaxes, there's all kinds of different things. So most of these surtaxes that we're talking about here kind of came along with Obamacare. It was kind of how they were going to balance the budget and pay for some of this stuff, which I don't think really went how anyone intended on there. But what we still have left over is a screwed up healthcare system and these wonderful surtaxes that don't even go to pay for what they said that they were going to pay for. Anyways, here we are. What that generally is, though, is those are surtaxes on generally passive income and stuff like that. It is not common to have these surtaxes added onto a 37% rate. Most of the time, for these top 1%ers, you're going to be paying at most 37% to the feds. Every once in a while, you can be unlucky enough or be in the wrong investment or not in the right investment for long enough time where you could pay more than this. And then there's also different things like early withdrawal penalties, different stuff like that, that are going to be a 10% penalty in some cases added on top of this. Yeah, it can get really, really expensive. And any way you look at this, there is no argument here that the rich don't pay their fair share. We have a graduated tax table. So literally the way that it works is the more that you make, the more taxes you pay in. You're paying a percentage of your income, and as you make more and more money, more of that money goes to the government. Now, it's going to be very hard for me to get through this episode without kind of gritting my teeth and looking at this stuff, because if anything, the truth of this couldn't be more of an opposite, right? If you're looking at this, the rich pay more than their fair share of taxes. If everyone's paying their fair share of taxes, then that would mean a flat tax rate schedule where everyone paid the same percentage. Share is proportionate. Share is relative. If I make $1 million and I pay 20% of my income and someone makes $50,000 and they pay 20% of your income, isn't that the only true solution where people are paying their fair share? And now this even kind of becomes a little bit more egregious when you start looking into what those taxes are paying for. We've talked about this in the past, and the universal thing here is that most of this tax money goes and gets squandered for something that probably no one will ever see, feel, touch, or even utilize. But the stuff that you do feel, the tangible aspects of this, are generally not used by the top 1%. Most of these social services, most of these different programs and stuff like that are not utilized by someone making $900,000 a year. Generally, most of the government funding programs are people that are making much less than that, right? Or not even making any money at all. So again, if you're talking about their share, then you could have an argument to say, yeah, I make a lot of money, but I have much less of a burden on the government than most other people on this. Plus, this is only talking about income tax. There is numerous types of taxes, and depending on what states you live in, even more. Think about someone that's making $1 million a year. How much do you think that they're paying in sales tax in a given year? So let's talk about Maryland. Let's say that you live in Maryland and Maryland sales tax is 6%. If you were to spend $500,000, you're going to donate, what, $30,000 to the state for sales tax? If you're making $100,000 a year, you're not going to ever give them $30,000 for sales tax, right? It's not possible for you to even pay that much. Not only are these rich paying a much higher tax rate, they're also contributing to all kinds of different types of taxes as well. You got sales tax, you got payroll tax. Do you think that they have more expensive houses with higher property tax values on it? Do you think that they're paying personal property taxes as well? And then we won't even factor in if they're self-employed. How much sales tax are they collecting from their customers, their employees for payroll tax, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't agree with me yet? All right, we'll keep going on this, but I think that you know the path that we're going down there. There is no way, there is no valid argument on anyone that has any sort of sense about taxes that the rich don't pay their fair share. When I'm talking about rich, like I said before, it's, hey, where does that start? Now, it also ends at a certain point, because when I talk about the rich don't pay their fair share, most of this angst is not directed towards the millionaires, even the tens of millionaires, even the hundreds of millionaires. Most of this stuff is directed at the billionaires and mega corporations, which we will talk about a little bit later. couple of fun facts about taxes and a couple reminders here. And this is the end of tax season on it, but I have a couple more things that I want to do. And I figure, hey, if we're going to do some tax stuff, let's do it all together. Some different things on the most common mistakes we might see for tax returns that come across our desk. That would be something of outside people of, hey, what kind of mistakes are we seeing other accounts make on their taxes so that we could let you guys know, make sure that you are looking for these things on it. And then more specifically, what mistakes are people making that end up costing money on taxes? I'm not going to go out there and say, hey, we see a ton of bad tax returns done by other accountants. No, I mean, most of the stuff that I see is generally very well prepared. And this is not because all accountants are really, really smart. Realistically, most of the people here listening to this, you got a fairly straightforward tax return. Your account might look like they're doing a lot of work, but I assure you, the tax software is doing about 99% of it. So technology is getting better and better, and it's allowing accountants just like myself to better serve our customers. But you just generally don't see those little silly mistakes that you used to because something's going to catch it. You got to put in check numbers and different things so they can kind of save you from yourself. Fun facts about taxes here. These are pre-COVID numbers, and I'll kind of put a little spin on it of what I think it is now, but you know, this has only gotten worse. And when I mean gotten worse, what does that mean? The biggest thing on this is when people come out and say, the rich don't pay their fair share in taxes, that you need to come back and say, hey, there is half of the population that pays zero money in taxes. True. Look it up. These are real numbers. Real numbers given us to by the government. I guess it's as true as you can make it out to be, and it makes sense because not all Americans work, right? If you're not working, you're probably not making any money. 50% of Americans pay zero federal income tax, which probably means they pay zero state income tax. Do you think the 50% of the Americans that do not pay any income tax and arguably probably do not work are utilizing any services of the government? Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure a ton of these. I'm sure a ton of these are retirees on Social Security. Now, it's not like it's a leech living off the government. Hey, they funded this stuff. This is what Social Security was made for. Plus, there's a lot of Americans out there on Social Security disability. Yeah, I'm sure that there's some people that are playing this and playing games on it. It's a very common fraud thing of either workers' comp, disability, but there's also a ton of people legitimately disabled. And one of the good things about our tax dollars is I wish that more of it went to help out people that needed it. I feel like that most people's angst and most people's discomfort about taxes is not, oh man, I'm helping out someone that's less fortunate than I am. I think it's the exact opposite, that you know, hey, I'm going to give the government this money and it's not going to go to anything tangible or anything useful for anyone. I had an idea before, which I'm not sure if it will ever come to light on this. It'll be a little bit harder on a federal level, but you know, I got three kids and two of them are in schools and my kids go to public schools on it. And you hear different things, fundraisers and stuff like that. And I'm like, whoa, supposedly a lot of our tax money is going to our education. What would be a great thing to get going is instead of paying money to the state for my taxes, if you could get a tax credit for donating that money to your kids' schools. Now, maybe you can't do it where it just goes to your schools. Maybe it goes to the county school system. But I think that people would feel a lot more kind of validated if they saw that money is going back to reinvest in their kids and their classmates and get new books and whatever it is. Now, will that ever happen? Probably not, right? You try to bring too much sense into taxes and or politics, it's not going to work. But hey, I thought it's a good idea. Of the 50% of Americans that pay zero in tax, what about the other 50%? Yeah, I mean, the other 50% is where all of this comes from. So we got, what, 400 million people in this country? So it means 200 million don't pay any taxes, 200 million that do. 50% of all that tax revenue comes from the top 1%. 50% of Americans, so let's just use these numbers. So we got 200 million people that are paying tax. We got 200 million people that are not paying tax. If you're looking at all of these, we have a top 1%, which is about 4 million people, 4 million taxpayers. So 4 million taxpayers out of the entire 400 million tax population or American population on it are paying 50% of all tax revenue. The rich are paying all the tax. This is where all the tax is coming from. And even if you drop this down, 95% of tax revenue comes from people making more than $200,000. So 95% comes from people over that mark. So if you make less than $200,000, you and everyone else that's making less than $200,000 is only contributing 5% of the overall budget. You were kind of not on the same page before, and I was like, I'm pretty sure the rich is paying their fair share. I think that you're probably following along now. As far as tax rates go, this is a very, very common misconception. I'm not going to say this is the most common because I feel like I use that phrase a lot, and I feel like I'm going to use it again here in a second when we talk about the billionaires and corps. But tax rates, every single time, and a lot of times it catches me by surprise of some people that I think understand how rates work and they really don't. You might have heard people say, oh, I don't want to go into the next tax bracket. Hey, how do I keep out of the next tax bracket? And now I've been doing this long enough that I can kind of pick up on people's tones and kind of read into what I think that they're leading to and kind of stop them before it all starts. The way the tax brackets work is there's different levels. So starting at 10%, going up to 37%, like we talked about. And every once in a while, I'll have a client say, I'm in a 24% tax bracket. When does the 24% tax bracket stop? And when does that go up to what would be the next one, which is 32%? And right there, I kind of know what they're saying and I stop them. And I say, do you realize that when you go into the next tax bracket, if you make a dollar above that, it's only going to cost you slightly more for that $1. That only that dollar that goes into the next bucket is taxed differently. Everything that you've already been taxed on, all those previous rates, that stays exactly the same. And you hear a big, oh, I didn't know that. A lot of people thought, all right, if I'm in a 24% tax bracket and I go to 32%, now they're going to take all my income and multiply it times 32%, not 24%. That is not right whatsoever. I'm going to go down for a married couple. Single is similar on this, but you know, this is probably the most common that we see on it, especially for self-employed people. So the way that it works, and this is taxable income. This is not how much money you make. It's how much money you make after any sort of deductions like mortgage interest, charity, real estate taxes, and stuff like that. Taxable income of zero to $23,000, you're only paying 10%. That's not too bad, right? But it's only up to $23,000. It only goes up, the next bracket only goes up to 12%. If you make zero to 23,000, whatever falls in that bucket is going to be taxed at 10%. Now, anything from 23% to 94,000, anything in that bucket is going to be taxed at 12%. That's such a slight change, you might not even notice if it was all recalculated on it. But until you make over $94,000, you're not paying a tax rate higher than 12%. That's pretty darn good. Once we get above that, and we start getting above 94,000 to 94,000 to 200 grand, now that money in that bucket is going to be taxed at 22%. The next bucket from 200 to 400 approximately is 24%. Now, if you start making money over $400,000, this is where stuff really starts to get expensive. And this is where people really start to feel it. This is when I say you're in the big boy tax brackets, because these taxes start coming a lot faster. So once your money is over $400,000, that money is going to start being taxed at 32%. So instead of a quarter of the money going to the government, now it's a third of that is going to the government. Once you get over around 500,000, it goes to 35%. And then, like I said, once you get close to 800 grand, it goes up to 30%. The largest jump is from 24% to 32%, that $400,000 mark. That is kind of the danger zone right there. That is where you are paying the most money in taxes than you ever have paid in the past. Taxes go up very fast because they're going up a third versus a quarter on that. Now, the good thing is there are deductions out there. There's tons of stuff you can do, retirement, health insurance, buying new equipment, expanding, buying new businesses, all kinds of stuff like that. NapaTrax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice, and having a local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, our representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business, with a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at napatrax.com. That's NAPATRACS.com. Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full-service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotive, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotive, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and experience the power of Promotive's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team. The good news about being in the 32% tax bracket is, yeah, income goes up, taxes go up, but if you have deductions, those taxes go down pretty well too. You get pretty good bang for your buck. You might have heard me mention this before. Generally, we're talking about depreciation. Why wouldn't you use the max amount of depreciation that you can in any given year? If I'm not having a great year, I could use $100,000 of depreciation. If I'm in the 12% tax bracket, that's going to save me 12 grand. Hey, 12 grand's a good bit of money, right? Flash forward to next year when we, you know, knew the business was starting to really hit its stride and make some money on it. Now we're making big boy dollars here. That 100 grand could have saved me 32,000 in a 32% tax bracket if I would have just held off on that. So this is where we talk about a lot of like, hey, when we see a really big downswing, hey, maybe we don't go super heavy on the deduction so we can save them and use those when we have one of these bigger upswings and stuff like that. I have done a whole episode on this. I think it's called Taxes Explained, Taxes 101 on it. We'll put a link in here. If you just look, I haven't done that many episodes, you will find it. But go into all the different kinds of taxes. We were just talking about ordinary, active, earned income. You got passive income. You got other non-qualified passive income. You got capital gains, long-term, short-term, collectibles. All kinds of different fun taxes on this. But that's why you have an accountant. Now, if you're curious on it, yeah, we've went down through those and see how some of this stuff is leveraged. And especially when we start to talk about here, the billionaires and the corporations, a lot of it has to do with reclassifying earnings and recognizing income differently. But again, maybe we'll do a whole episode on some of those tales of the uber rich, because some of that stuff is pretty clever. The bad news is a lot of these things do not work for most people. Think about that. If your tax rate is 22%, most of these strategies involve spending money, but you're trying to spend money slower than you're saving it. Now, once you get into 37% tax rates and above on it, yeah, you can start to get kind of creative, because there's a lot of things that are still cheaper than paying that tax bill. This whole time, we've only really talked about the federal. We haven't talked about states. Really, the icing on the cake here is the federal doesn't have a true millionaire's tax or anything like that. They have a couple things that are kind of similar, but it's generally tagged on stuff that's taxed more favorably. Nothing where, like I said before, they're adding it to their top rate. States, on the other hand, there is a number of states that have millionaire's taxes and different things that they do with it. I think the most recent one that was coming across was something about Massachusetts was doing something, maybe even a billionaire's tax. The hard part about these states trying to get very aggressive on this is you probably don't want to move out of the United States and renounce your citizenship, which is the only way to avoid federal taxes. State taxes are a lot easier though, right? You can just move. And depending on what state it is, it might be extremely easy to move. Also, most of this is you don't need to move completely. You just need to make sure you spend more time in the place that you want to be taxed than the place that you don't want to be taxed on this. COVID was a great kind of lens into that. We saw a lot of people fleeing, and especially with the remote work, right? Look at New York City. New York City is a prime example of somewhere that is extremely expensive to live, extremely expensive to pay taxes in. It's just very, very expensive. So a lot of people moved out of there. New York City is extremely, extremely underfunded right now. They are scrambling because their tax revenues have been slashed. Because even though that was one of the focal points of tax the rich and Wall Street and all that, they did not realize, I think the people in charge did, the people they're protesting did not realize, hey, all of that uber rich, all those ones that you want to get the hell out of the town, yeah, they're the ones keeping the lights on, because I don't have the numbers. New York City doesn't report that stuff. But look at on the federal level, top 5% is paying all the tax, New York is probably much, much worse than that. I would argue that 99.9% probably comes from the top 1%. Not because there's poor people not doing anything there. No, their top 1% is the top of the top. Think about what the most expensive apartment is in New York City. It's not even a house. If you go to any other city or state, the most expensive real estate is probably a house. It's probably a luxury penthouse condo for, what, $80 million? You go to Topeka, Kansas, you couldn't spend $80 million on an apartment or condo, even if you bought probably a whole high-rise building. So I kind of buried the lead there. But as far as most expensive places to live on this, if I had to put it out there as a poll, where do you think the most expensive state is to live just on income tax level? If you said most expensive state and then you added income tax on it, your answer probably would not change. The top three most expensive are California, Hawaii, and New York. What does not belong there? Hawaii, maybe? Tropical island, I guess New York is kind of, New York City is, but we'll talk about that in a second. It's also not in the continental U.S. There's a lot of different reasons of why Hawaii is higher. Also, I mean, you think California is expensive, Hawaii, the cost of living is drastically. But it's also an island in the middle of the ocean. It's also beautiful. So you know what? You might be getting what you're paying for there. Now, California, same thing. I mean, there is a lot of beautiful parts of California, but that takes the cake as the most expensive state to live in. They recently raised their top tax bracket from 13.3% to 14.4%. I'm not sure if you have your calculators out, but if the top California tax rate is at 14.4 and the top federal rate is at 37%, that means that people making over $800,000 in California are paying over half of their money to the government, either the federal government or the state government. That hurts. It's just very hard, especially if for someone like in my position on it, where I make my money more or less just by talking, I don't sell a product on it. We're in a services business. If you look at this and you just kind of look in a bubble of, all right, I have made a bunch of money here and I'm going to go out and I'm going to sell whatever. Let's just going to say I'm going to sell a valuation or estate plan on this. And it's $10,000. In that situation, all right, I just sold this. I just did all this. My customer paid me $10,000. They're happy with it. I have to give $5,000 of that to California and the government. Anyone that can sit down and justify of like, all right, why did me deciding to do that extra work, deciding to dedicate my time to figure out how to do this stuff, to market it, to sell it to people, and now you get half of it? Yeah, I mean, taxation is theft. If you probably call it by any other name or if anyone else was collecting it besides the government. But good news for my clients is, yeah, I don't like taxes very much and like to get my clients to pay as least amount as possible because I do feel that not only the rich, but I think that everyone pays more than their fair share on this. And if you're going to write the tax laws, if we're going to have legal ways that we can minimize and reduce it, yeah, we're going to take every possible break that we possibly can. So like I said before, Hawaii, pretty expensive as well, but relatively cheap at only the taxpayers will be paying around 11%. And I kind of mentioned this before, but New York State is slightly below that. I think that they probably did this deliberately to stay out of the top two, but their top tax bracket is 10.9%. They have something else though, that if you are over 25 million, you pay even more tax on it, which like I said, New York has the top 1%, the 1%. Most states probably wouldn't have a ton of people in that category. I'm sure there is tons and tons in that 25 million in New York, and especially New York City. So New York City, if New York City was its own state, which by populace, by GDP, by a lot of things, it is larger than a lot of states, but it is not its own state. So New York City has its own tax. Yes, like a lot of other cities around the country, generally lower than New York City. If you live in New York City, you're going to be paying three major taxes. You pay federal tax, you pay New York State tax, and you also pay New York City tax as well. New York City taxes can almost reach 4%. If you have about 11% on the state, you have another 4% to New York City, you're paying almost an extra 15% on top of the 37% federal. So yes, the top income earners in New York City are paying over 52% of their money to the government. I think you probably wrapped your head around this and probably squashed the idea that the rich do not pay their fair share and probably have come full circle like I have and said, whoa, this seems to be way more than their fair share. Not that anyone really has any time or any sort of sympathy for millionaires complaining about their taxes, but yeah, I get it. It does suck. And you know what? You're probably going to care a lot more when hopefully one day you get into that category and start getting those tax bills. It is a champagne problem. It does suck. I mean, taxes do suck. We should have that as our new slogan. I'm going to start printing the t-shirts on it now. Speaking of not paying taxes, what about those darn billionaires and mega corporations? This is where most of this comes from, right? It's not even like when people say the rich don't pay their fair share. They're not talking about millionaires. They're not even talking about, hey, that guy's really rich. I mean, these are the people building spaceships and stuff. And there is some truth to this, but it is a lot more complicated as you might or might not have imagined. And when I mean complicated, I'm going to use Trump's tax returns as an example. No, I don't have a copy of them. No, I'm not going to talk about what is on them or anything like that. Because if I did, most people, including myself, probably wouldn't understand half of what's going on. The funniest part about when people were calling for Trump's tax return is they were thinking that this was like something that he did in TurboTax. So that if there was some sort of deduction that was taken or not taken or aggressive position on it, that it would be any sort of kind of smoking gun for Donald Trump. Now, obviously, he's responsible for whatever he signs on his tax returns. But do you know everything that put on your tax return? If you're one of my clients, do you know every single line and every single thing that we checked? Absolutely not, right? And you have a very basic tax return. There's a huge level of trust that you put into your taxes. And me, like most other accounts out there, once you're kind of input more on projections and stuff like that, I probably don't want your input on passive loss limitations and things like that, because this is very, very complicated and best left to the professionals. Now, someone like Donald Trump, and this is not just a Republican-Democrat thing, Joe Biden, Obama, George Bush, these guys in this select categories on it, from what I've heard, and this is might be not true on it, they almost get audited every single year. The government's not stupid. If someone is making hundreds of millions of dollars, think about how little they need to notice or look and how much money they can get back. Compare that to someone that's making 100 grand a year. What's the most that they could ever find someone kind of circling the tax laws on it? No, I mean, this stuff is all done by the book. And also these people that make this much money, also some of the reason that the tax laws are written the way that they are is because they wanted them to be written that way. Why do you think that they're donating money to campaigns? Why do you think that they're donating money to different special interest groups or watchdog groups and stuff like that? Because this is how Washington happens. This is how these bills come to life on this. And you don't think that someone out there says, hey, you know what? It'd be great if there was a tax credit for chicken farmers in Wyoming. It just so happens that the largest chicken farmer in Wyoming donated a lot of money to the governor's campaign, right? This stuff does happen. Where a lot of these numbers come in and you see these percentages, right? Jeff Bezos paid less than 1% in taxes. It has nothing to do with their actual tax return, right? And that's what I always say of like, all right, then bring up the tax return and show me where that 1% rate is calculated, because my forms can't calculate a 1% rate. It doesn't exist. So I want to see these forms that they give these billionaires that have that magical 1% automatically pop up. Like what happens? Once you start making over $1 billion, you get a different tax return. They're like, all right, enough paying taxes. You're going to ride easy street from here on out. No, what they're doing is they're looking at the tax return and they're calculating how much tax they paid. $500,000, $1 million in tax. And then they're dividing it by these people's net worth. So Jeff Bezos paid only $2.5 million in taxes, but his net worth is $13 trillion, whatever the heck it is. So that means he paid less than 1% in taxes. They are comparing wealth to income. Wealth has nothing to do with income. Income tax is just that, is a tax on income. It is not a tax on wealth. Now, if you're saying, well, it should be, no, I don't think that you want it that way. And I would almost guarantee you that you don't, but you probably don't understand why. This is the big conception, right? If you are a billionaire, does that mean that you have $1 billion in a bank account? Have you ever heard of the term liquid or illiquid? Most of this wealth is illiquid, right? They cannot turn it into cash and probably don't want to relatively quickly. This is them investing in stocks. Maybe it's their own business that they started, and those stocks over the years have become more and more valuable. Or maybe they invested in real estate to become more and more valuable. None of that stuff in itself is a taxable event. Think about it this way. Let's say that you inherit $1,000 worth of Bitcoin in 2000, right? Was there even Bitcoin around in 2000? Probably. If there was the internet, there was Bitcoin, I think. one of my crypto people are going to yell at me and say, no, it was invented in 2002 or whatever. But let's say you got $1,000 worth of Bitcoin in the year 2000. How much would that be worth today? I have no idea, but probably a ton of money. What I'm going to show you is, let's just say that that Bitcoin is now worth $1 billion today, that my grandmother was ahead of her time and really thought that crypto was the future, and she got $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, left it to me, and now that Bitcoin is now worth $1 billion. If you're looking at that, in the year 2000, I didn't have any money. Now today, would you not consider me a billionaire? Yeah, if you got $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, then hunt, you are a billionaire. What if I told you that I would have become a billionaire, I would have paid zero money in taxes? Do you think that that's fair? No, hell no, hunt. Of course that's not fair. So this is the prime example of where people don't like this. Me, now a billionaire, if you looked at my tax returns over the years, I never reported a single cent in taxes. Once I knew that I was worth a bunch of money on it, I stopped working. So I had no income. All I had was this Bitcoin, and now it's worth $1 billion. From the year 2000 to the year 2024, I would not have paid a cent in taxes. Not because I'm an accountant, not because I know a loophole, but this is called an unrecognized gain. You only pay taxes on gains that you recognize. Meaning, if I was to sell all that Bitcoin today, I would have $1 billion in gains, and I would have a lot of taxes to pay, right? Massive, massive amounts of taxes to pay. But until I sell that Bitcoin or that stock or that piece of real estate, I do not pay a cent in taxes. This is where people get confused. And this is why the rich don't pay their fair share does have a little bit of credence here. Because if you can do this correctly and you have enough money and you play these tax laws correctly, this is where you see stuff passed down to generations. Because no one ever sells anything. Think about it right now. Maybe you rent your shop. And if you're one of the people that rents their shop and it's owned by a family, it's been owned for four generations, or maybe it's currently held in a trust, this is the kind of stuff. They're never going to sell that strip mall because that strip mall generates some money and it also appreciates. It's going to be something for their family to live off of, their family's family, and they're using these assets as their own little income generating properties themselves and also a wealth generator. A lot of people talk about this. We need to close that loophole. You can't close that loophole. Like, I get it. It seems to kind of stink, but they're also not really recognizing that income in a common sense way. There is ways to leverage this, which, like I said, maybe it would be cool to do an episode where I do talk about some of these wild strategies. Not that they would be usable for most people probably listening to this. Hey, maybe we got some really, really rich people listening to this. Some of them are maybe not useful for you, but a little bit creative. And if you're interested in the financial stuff, a little bit interesting, which is a relative term. Like I said, if this quote-unquote loophole was ever closed, it would wreak havoc on financial markets, right? No one would ever hold a stock through the end of the year because you're going to have to pay tax on however much that appreciates in a year anyways. Might as well sell it to get that money out of there if you're going to be taxed anyways. So people would sell stocks out of this, less demand for the market, market goes down. If you didn't sell out or sell out that piece of real estate or whatever it is, you would have people that would have massive tax bills that just wouldn't make any sense. Let's say that I had massive appreciation in a piece of real estate that I'm currently operating my business out of. My business is not doing well. It was actually a terrible year, but because my building just went up $1 million in value, I got to give the government 250 grand. Yeah, no, that's just impossible. And you would have situations where physically people could not pay this. Mega corporations and corporations in general, we'll put publicly traded corporations in here just to kind of set a bar on this. But we're talking about the big boys. They are in such another category. And like I said before, look at these bills that pass. There are credits for stuff that you've never heard of, but someone paid, donated, good money to get that credit to build that factory, that lab, that whatever it is there. This is not all for bad, and we'll talk about a couple different examples here, but most of the corporations, they don't follow the same set of rules. These are C corporations, so they do have a flat 21% tax, but there is tons and tons of credits, and even more so if you get onto the state level. And like I said, there is a bit of tongue-in-cheek here. A lot of this stuff is done in bad faith, done to save taxes, and hey, if you got the money to do it, if you can get someone to listen, whatever, more power to you. But also a lot of this is to stimulate different things. Taxes is the major way that the government can change behavior. We want people to buy solar. Give them a tax credit. We want people to start driving more electric vehicles. Great, give them a tax credit. We want people to start putting EV chargers in their business. All right, give them a tax credit. taxes change people's behavior. Hey, you know what? Tell you how much or how little people would buy equipment if you couldn't write the entire cost off in the first year. I remember a time when you couldn't do that in entirety on it, and it definitely changed people's mindsets. There's also a lot of good that comes out of this. Hey, I don't want to go and invest all of my money in that neighborhood. It's kind of run down, stuff like that. The city or the state will look at this and be like, man, we really need to get that community revitalized. It's never going to happen unless we get jobs and businesses there. Great, let's give them a tax credit to go and open up that warehouse or open up that distribution center and stimulate the economy, get some jobs back in there, and hopefully lift up that neighborhood. This is exactly what Amazon did with, I think it was, what do they call it, HQ2. It was a couple of years ago. I think DC was in the running, Pittsburgh. There's a couple of cities around here that were in the running. What Amazon did is, so they were trying to kind of court where they wanted their second big headquarters to be. It was going to be a lot of corporate stuff, so a lot of jobs, a lot of infrastructure, politics, a lot of jobs. We're going to come invest here. So essentially what they did was pretty clever. And some other people have kind of stolen this idea, but no one to the scale of what Amazon did. But Amazon essentially went and said, hey, Atlanta, we want to come here. What would you do for us? If you came and you built your headquarters here, you would have your own special zoning board on it. You could build whatever you want. You don't pay any property tax for 30 years. And then Pittsburgh came and said, hey, you're not going to pay any sort of property tax for 50 years. We're going to give you this. We're going to give you access to the railroads. We're going to give you whatever, the key to the city. And then DC came out and said, we'll build a skyscraper. We'll call it the Amazon Tower. We'll give you this credit. So really what they were doing is they were saying, we're going to do all this stuff to try to entice you to come here. Why did they do that? Now, we talked about before, yeah, they're bringing jobs, but people don't really care about jobs. When I say people don't care about jobs, politicians don't care about jobs. Jobs don't pay the bills, but people that pay taxes on the wages that they earned at those jobs do. Most of the stuff all has to do with local payroll tax and local sales tax. Same exact thing with stadiums. And I'll use the example here of Washington Commanders, DC Commanders. Their stadium currently right now is in Maryland. And if anyone has been to FedEx Field, it is a crap hole, worst stadium, not only because I'm not a Commanders fan, but it's just a really bad stadium. It's old, it's hard to park at, it stinks. Like a lot of places, people don't like cities, states, municipalities paying for these quote-unquote billionaire stadiums. Yet most places keep on paying for these billionaire stadiums. And why? We are getting a glimpse of it right here because it's the Washington Commanders. They practice in Virginia. They play in Maryland on it. None of it has anything to do with DC. What they're fighting about now is the stadium going to be built in Maryland? Is it going to be built just over the border in DC or a little bit farther over there into Virginia? We got three kind of municipalities and three different tax jurisdictions here who are all fighting over that. Why? Why do you think paying $1 million or whatever, $100 million to build a stadium is ever going to be a smart financial decision? So when you go to a stadium next time, and you will get a receipt because you can't pay cash anywhere, when you go and you buy a beer on it, not only is that beer going to be exorbitantly expensive, take a look at the taxes on there. Most stadiums not only pay sales tax, they also pay an entertainment tax or special stadium tax. So essentially what this is 5%, 15%. Anything that they sell on premises, merchandise, food, season tickets, advertising, all that stuff has a special surtax that gets paid. So yeah, they might have put out $100 million to build this stadium, but it's kind of like investing in a business. Their business is just taxes. They get a cut of every single cent that runs down through there. Not too bad. Now think about it this way too. The way that it works for athletes is they pay tax on where they are for those games. Let's just use NFL because it's a lot easier. I can't even imagine Major League Baseball. Think about how many games and how many different places they pay. I would never want to do one of their tax returns. We've actually done tax returns for people in the NBA before. It is a little bit tricky. Don't currently have one. Yeah, I'm not going to break any sort of privacy violations there, but this is years ago and he is no longer a client of it, but was when I first started. And this is where I learned about this. I'm like, why is he paying all these different stats in all these different states? Oh, that's where he gets his game checks. The way that works is if you, let's say the Pittsburgh Steelers are in town playing the Baltimore Ravens, those guys will get a game check. And specifically, the Steelers will get a game check. That money that they earn for that game is going to be taxed in Maryland because they're playing in Maryland. The way that works for the NFL is whatever someone makes in a year, more or less, they divide it by 16 weeks and they get paid 1/16 every single week. It used to be really straightforward. That's how it worked. Now, these contracts are so wacky and people have kind of gotten a little bit smarter. Well, they'll do incentive money, which is not taxed the same as regular game checks. But yeah, there is a whole tax code just on athletes and stuff like that. But think about that, right? If you're looking at an NFL sideline, how much do you think all of those people made for that one day? And let's be really conservative, because there is could be someone on the sideline that is making a tenth of that just by themselves. But let's say that $20 million is taxed on that sideline. What would that be as far as taxes? If it's $20 million and you're in Maryland and it's 8%, I mean, that would be over $1.5 million in taxes just on the people's game checks. That's their game checks. What about all the people that work for the business, all the concession people, the people in the parking lot? There is so much stuff, right? The business of building a stadium is also a business in itself. Just like a lot of people think, hey, the rich don't pay their fair share, and now we're paying for a gosh darn stadium for them too. Hey, it's not all a dumb investment on this. And yeah, there is merit to a lot of this. But just with anything, I'm sure that there's a darker side to this as well. Hopefully this was enlightening to you, and maybe it made you feel a little bit better that while you might have had a large contribution to Uncle Sam this year, you are not alone. And for most anyone that walks amongst you and I, there is not this hidden secret. Like we talked about before, once you start making over $1 million, they don't give you a new tax form where you unlock those secret rates. The thought there is a giant loophole there for most taxpayers could not be farther from the truth, as we have just learned. And there's always going to be smarter ways to invest, invest wiser, and to make more logical decisions, but taxes will always be there. The only two things in life that are certain, death and taxes. Please share this with friends if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes. Please shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite listening apps. So thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.